Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 my friends, to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for this sunshiny. It's just beautiful here in Philadelphia. A Saturday morning, May the 22nd, the Saturday right before the Memorial Day weekend. I know a lot of you are out there traveling and enjoying being with your friends and your family. But thank you so much for being here with us this morning. I really appreciate it. And it's truly a joy to have you here with us on this Saturday morning. For those of you that it might be your first time listening to Off the Shelf, I am your host, Denise Turney, and I'm coming to you live from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I so appreciate your support. I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving, inspirational book that you need to add to your book collection. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, any bookstore anywhere. If you don't see it on the shelves, just ask the book clerk for it and she can get it for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now on this just a glorious day, I'm sitting here in my office at my home, and the sun is just streaming through the window. I am so honored to bring to you a focus. I've known of her for several years, and I'm excited about this interview to actually speak with her. This is a focused, a committed, faithful, upwardly, just on the move, entrepreneur and business leader, and her name is Ann Wenzel. Ann Wenzel is the founder and owner of EconoSystems, an economic consulting firm for small businesses. She is online at www, and please write this down and bookmark it. You can go over there and visit her as we do the interview and check out some of the offerings that her business has. She's online at www.econosystems, and that's spelled econosystems.com, the way it sounds, www.econosystems.com. So happy to have you here with us this morning, the Saturday before Memorial Day, and welcome to Off the Shelf.
Thank you so much, Denise. It's such an honor to be here. I've known you really since I launched my business, since we started networking together at the Entrepreneurial Parent, and I've always been a big fan of yours, so I'm very honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. Ann is for our listeners. She's tuning in from the West Coast, so it's early out there this morning, so I really appreciate her connecting on this early Saturday morning. I just want to begin by saying and doing my research for the show and then just the years that I have known you and how you are so – how you stay connected to your clients, people that you know, prospective customers and clients. I really admire that about you. And I got to tell you, you do that better than anybody that I am aware of. I know a lot of large businesses do that, but I think you do that better than anybody I've yet had, you know, encountered or had experience with. And so I wanted to start by saying, you know, you value so much and you know how to stay connected to your clients and your business partners and other business and creative leaders that you come in contact with. I cannot tell our listeners how good at this Ann is. I wanted to ask you, for our listeners, how important is it, Ann, that writers, other creative artists, and other business entrepreneurs, that they reach out to their existing clients and business partners regularly and stay in touch with them? How important is that?
For me, and I think for all, it's really critical because you never know when your clients or your colleagues have a need. It could be years in the making. And if you think about launching your business, nobody I know plans on launching their business for a short amount of time. Usually they want to launch a successful business. And so you need to be consistent about your marketing and write it down and follow through on it. But even if you don't reach out often, you do have to do it regularly and consistently. I have times where I'll send out a mailing to someone, and I don't hear from them. And I'll hear from them 3 or 4 years later, and I know that the reason why they know I'm still in business and they know I'm still doing the same thing is because I've been contacting them regularly, sending them friendly mailings 2 or 3 times a year. year after year. And so I'll have people call me 3 or 4 years later, and I'm happy to do business with them, and they refer people to me 3 or 4 years later, and I know it's because I keep in constant contact.
Wow. I have heard, I often hear that it's easier to keep a current customer or client than it is, and actually less expensive than it is to get a new one. But as a business, somebody, myself, as an entrepreneur, it is so tempting to think the way to grow a business is to go after those new customers that you don't have, and you just assume the ones you do have will be around. So I think that's very important. I've heard so many people say that you have got to stay connected to your current clients. I actually have the card. I'm just looking up that you sent me in my end bin in my office. I just looked up just now and saw it. Oh my goodness! So you are just tops at that. Why do you think, Ann, after what I just stated, why do you think that we do put so much focus on getting new clients and customers versus enriching the relationships that we have with existing clients? Why is that so tempting?
I think that some people believe that that's the way to grow, and it is important to get new customers. There's no doubt about it. And also it can be fun. It can be fun to reach out and to new people and exciting to get a new client. So I think there's that excitement, that payoff of getting a new client. But I think that serving existing customers well is highly underrated as a marketing technique. I can't emphasize that enough. To take care of your existing customers and serve them well is an incredible marketing technique. Some people think about it, well, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing what my business is here for. But if you serve your current customers well, they'll tell other people how good you are and what a wonderful business you have, and that will bring in the new customers, or they'll keep coming back over and over again. And the most profitable customers are the ones that keep coming back over and over again. And at the end of the day, it's about profits. It's not about sales. And if you have a lot of sales, but you've spent a lot of money acquiring the new customers, you're not very profitable. And it's so nice at the end of the month to be able to write yourself out a check. And it's much easier to do if you have consistent clients who give you revenue without your having to spend any marketing dollars.
Oh, man, so well put. I hope all our listeners, all of our entrepreneurs, all of our writers who are entrepreneurs, and they may either self-publish or they're going through a mainstream publisher, but it's still you're earning your money from your creative arts, from what you're creating. So that is, in a sense, a business, that you listen to what Ann just said. That's so important. It's not so much the sales, and that's a part of it, but if you spend $100,000 to get, I don't know, maybe $250,000. If you spend $100,000 to get $100,000 in sales, you just broke even. You didn't make any money. But if you have existing customers that don't cost you, but maybe, I don't know, maybe $10,000 to get them to make another order, they've been with you for several years, and you just made $90,000. And that's just simple math. You can see how that works out to focus not only on the sales but also the profit. And when and why did you create EconoSystems?
Well, I created EconoSystems because primarily I was having trouble with childcare. I just could not find anybody good that I could trust. In the late 1990s, we were experiencing a boom here in Silicon Valley, and I was working for a local research company, and I just couldn't find anyone good. Anyone that had a job, anyone that wanted a job, I should say, had a job, and there was a lot of demand for childcare, more people going out of the home and working and not offering childcare. So I just was very unhappy with my childcare situation and having a hard time going to work, not feeling that my son was in a safe place, that he was really being cared for. So I came across a book about starting a home-based business. And while I was still employed at my former employer, I began researching starting a home-based business very aggressively. And then a few months later, I ended up getting laid off from my last job. They had a very unprofitable consulting section, And finally, after 10 years of losses, they decided to shut it down and spin off the more profitable section. So I ended up with a nice severance. And eventually, I also negotiated a contract to continue to do a portion of my work with my former employer. But at the same time, I had been researching starting a business. I now had this nice cash cushion with which I could launch my business and not really have to worry about being profitable right away. So my biggest problem was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, because I didn't really like my last job, and I thought about a lot of different ideas. And my difficulty was I want this business for me, because I want to be able to run a home-based business, and I'm learning from a lot of people that this is possible. But I have to make the focus about my customers. It's all about me, really, but I have to think, what can I do for other people that they're willing to pay me for? And I ran into a former professor at a 100-year anniversary of my university, a celebration that they had. And I told her some of my ideas, and she told me, oh, I might use your services. So while I was researching, she ended up calling me and giving me a contract. So I, a week after, I got one unemployment check, so I was unemployed for 2 weeks, and then I launched my business because I got this first customer. And then very soon after that, I got a very nice contract with my former employer, and then eventually I got my third and my fourth customer. And I really felt, after I got my fourth customer, which took about 9 months, I really felt like then I was a solid business. Customer to me was like a psychological breaking point. Like, now I'm really a business.
And I'm listening to you, and I'm like sitting here and amazed. When things happen to us, I don't know if we really see it all the way, if you share it with somebody else, that they might not have as much attached to the outcome, and they can see it. I'm listening to you, and so you're sitting here talking, and you're saying, you know, I started aggressively. Which I really, I just thought when you said that, that was a good thing. I really, you didn't passively, it was like, kind of in the middle. But you knew what you wanted to do. And I actually spoke, it was another woman, Valerie Coleman, who started a business in a similar situation. Was there any hint? Your inner guide was definitely on the ball, man, because you started taking steps to start your own company right before a company you were working for. This is amazing to me. That is so amazing. The timing is just phenomenal. You listened to what this inner guidance. You listened. You fought. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And then in 9 months you had, like you said, your third, your fourth. That is just that's amazing to me. I'm sitting there listening to you. When you were talking, I'm like, wow. She's just listening. She's following her inner guidance. What was the purpose? The process, like you're saying, of creating Econo Systems. I'm so grateful to you for sharing that. When you started researching, saying, you know what, you said it was childcare that made you say, you know, I want to be able to work from home so I can take care of my child, and how you do both of those, that's something else that we can discuss. I can't even imagine doing that, taking care of a child and running a business at the home. So it sounds like you went, was this when Econo Systems, when you landed on this particular business, how did you land on Econo Systems, and did you follow your heart first, would you say, or your head?
I think I followed the opportunities. So other ideas that I had for a business, one which I was kind of excited about was and I actually own the URL, adventuresinlearning.net. I thought about starting a learning center, a learning camp for children, because I love being around kids, and I love doing activities around kids. And the one reason why I didn't pursue childcare and this Adventures in Learning camp is because, you know, I'm kind of selfish. When you do childcare, you really can't take a day off. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, if I do this summer camp, then that means, you know, my summer, when my son is out of school, I'm going to be working really hard all summer. And so it was kind of selfishness. I knew the kind of lifestyle that I wanted. I wanted to be able to take a day off once in a while when I needed. And you can't do that when you run a daycare center. And I wanted to have some time to spend with my family in the summer. So even though I'm very excited about the experiential type learning, that was my idea behind the Adventures in Learning Camp. I really stuck with what I had been doing before. And so in that respect, I used my head because I am an economist. I am a market researcher. And I understood that I had a lot of years of experience and I was very good at what I did. And to go into something new entirely, I would be starting from scratch. And I did want to earn a living at this. And when you start from scratch, where you're learning everything brand new, there's a lot of energy that goes into that. And I knew that if I used my experience and my contacts, that it would be easier and that it would be more profitable. And one of the surprising things that I found is that I really enjoyed doing the research work in another environment. So I came to realize that a lot of it was the structure and the environment that I was in, not necessarily that I didn't enjoy the work. And another thing about launching my business, when I was at my former research institute employer, it was very solo, it was very lonely. I was in my office, and I actually used to call it my room, because that's how I felt about it. I would tell people I'm going back to my room, because I really felt like I was being sent to my room when I had to do my job. And what's nice about running your own business is you need to go out and network and meet people.
Yeah.
And after I had been in business a few years, even though I was doing very similar work, I was very surprised at how well the skills transferred from my job to my business. I saw a stack of business cards, and I thought about all the wonderful people I've met, and I said to myself, if I hadn't launched my business, I would have never met all these wonderful people. And I was just so happy for the decision. So the moving myself out of a one-room environment and into an environment where I'm growing my own business and I'm doing marketing and meeting people and selling as well as doing the research, that really made me understand that I can continue on this path of doing economic research and market research and be really happy in what I do for a living.
You are a phenomenal woman. You hear about these phenomenal
Thank
women.
You.
you are very clear. When people talk and you can hear their thinking is very clear, that is just, you got more and more success coming your way. I want to ask you, Ann, how does EconoSystems, how does it help writers, creative artists, and entrepreneurs who own other types of small businesses, how does EconoSystems help them to grow and manage their finances or even have a better understanding about the role of finances in the success of their business?
Well, the way I work with artists and writers now is I have a contract with the Silicon Valley Small Business Development Center. So once I got that contract, I now direct small business owners to the Small Business Development Center for two reasons. First of all, the services are free of charge. And when they come one-on-one to me, I, of course, have to charge my consulting fee. Mm-hmm. And this way, if they go to the Small Business Development Center and they establish a relationship with them, then the Small Business Development Center contracts out with me, and I get paid by the SBDC. And so it's not quite the same because when I do it one-on-one, I will actually do some of the research. I'll actually do some of the writing for my clients. But not very many entrepreneurs, especially the people I work with. I work with very small businesses. I've never worked with a company that had more than 10 employees, and I mostly work with people who work solo.
Okay.
Not many of them have the budget to pay a consultant on top of everything else. So I like referring them to the SBDC because the services are free of charge. We say that we're one of the best kept secrets out there.
Okay.
People don't know about us. They don't realize that they can go to their local SBDC and get advising for how to run their business, even if it's a solopreneur. And most of the people that we have are, they think that we help large businesses, but that's not true. 80% of my clients.
What does that acronym stand for our listeners who might not know?
SBDC is Small Business Development Center.
Oh, okay.
And they're nationwide.
Okay.
And, if someone's in a different geographic region, I'll ask them to look up their local Small Business Development Center, and I tell them, and if it doesn't work, you can still work one-on-one with me. I'm very happy to do that. And I have worked with a wonderful entrepreneur in Chicago. I worked with someone in New York and in Arizona. And so I do advise small business owners over the phone. But I first refer them to the Small Business Development Center and tell them if for some reason it doesn't work out, I'm more than happy to work with you one-on-one. But I just feel free is much better.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what I do. And then another reason why it's good to go to the Small Business Development Center is my specialty is business plan writing and market research. But we have other advisors who are CPAs, people with backgrounds in human resources, people with actual marketing backgrounds. Mine is the research background, but there are marketing specialists there that can help devise a really good hands-on marketing plan. And if you need to sell a business, there are people who can help get your business ready for selling. There are people who can help get you ready for a presentation if you are seeking angel investing funding or venture capital funding. So the nice thing about the Small Business Development Center is you don't just have my expertise. I might be your primary counselor, but when I find, you know, I don't have the expertise to help you in this area, I find the counselor who can help you in that area. So that's another reason why it's good to go to the SBDC. I do have writers and I do have artists. The artists that I've worked with, I worked with before my contract with the Small Business Development Center, and it's actually one of my favorite industries to work in. I'm really a supporter of the fine arts, and I'm really a supporter of the artists earning a living at what they do. So while I haven't had any artists come to me through the SBDC, I have worked with several through EconoSystem.
Okay. And you said your specialty is market research and the business plans. Why is market research, I got to tell you, as someone who has been in business for over a decade, this isn't something that, you know, just pops out at me, like that it's important. Working with financial investment firms, I do know that they put a lot of value into market research. Why is market research, for those of us who might be creative artists or own a different type of business as an entrepreneur, why is market research important to the success of our business?
I have a very strong belief that you can follow your passion and be profitable. And what market research enables you to do is be profitable. I meet with people, and they're going to launch their business no matter what. And I understand that, and I try to help them be as successful as possible. But it is better, and it is more profitable if you look out into the community, whether it's your neighborhood or your county or your state or the nation or the globe, if you're going to sell things globally. It is much better to look out into the world and see whether or not people actually want what you're going to be selling. Mm-hmm. And I think that basically is what market research is all about. Do people really want to buy what I'm selling? And are they going to pay a price at which I am going to be profitable, where I'm going to cover all my costs and I'm going to actually be able to draw a paycheck for all the time that I invest in this? And you research what the customer's wants and needs are. You research how many people besides me, how many businesses besides me are serving these customers. What kind of competition do I have? And can I beat the competition? Can I match the competition? And, you know, what am I doing a little bit different so that people shop with me rather than my competitors? I know that people really underestimate competition out there in the marketplace. And so you can pursue your passion. But what I like to do with people is when I meet with them, okay, you've got some competitors or you've got some clients out there and maybe they don't want to pay as much as you need to be profitable. What can you do a little bit differently? And that's actually how I started business planning, because I am a market researcher, but in the dot-com bust, people tend not to research markets when markets are contracting, and it's actually a very smart thing. And so when nobody wanted market research because they were laying off employees and their sales were falling, everybody knew that we were in a recession and that people were not in the mood to buy. Not a really good time to pay for market research unless you have a lot of cash and you're, you know, looking for the few growing markets, or you're looking for positioning your company for when the rebound happens. So I have myself had to say, okay, what can I do to get sales? And I met with a business coach, and we decided to launch workshops on business planning and running your business. One of the things that I found is a successful business doesn't just require a good market. It doesn't just require a good business plan. It also requires that the entrepreneur and the business owner do what it takes to make the business successful.
Mm.
And that means changing how your family depends upon you. It means changing how you spend your time. It means really remaining committed to doing things, even when things get really busy. So working with clients, I realized that a lot of change has to come from within for a business
yeah.
to be successful.
Mm.
So I knew that, and I met a coach at a networking event. And so she gave the first half of the workshop on how to manage change, and then I gave the second half of the workshop on how to figure out what your customers need and want, how to figure out how to reach them. And so we launched this workshop series, and we were able to get some revenue that way. So rather than pay my hourly fee, you could pay $25 and sit with a group of 4 to 6 entrepreneurs and get my expertise that way. And then I also started a coaching service where I actually worked one-on-one over the telephone, helping people write their business plans.
Wow.
That was a very affordable way to get access to my services.
Mm.
And because I launched that in the recession, that service is what enabled me to get the contract with the Small Business Development Center.
Wow.
So I had myself had to say, okay, my clients can't afford my services. How can I repackage what I do so that they can afford it, so that I can still get some revenue going
wow.
in? And that kind of looking at the market, anybody can do that. That's just an example of how I did it. Anybody can repackage what they do in a way that's affordable when times are tough, or really tap into the market when times are good and your market is growing.
That is, you just listening to you, and I think that is I have learned that is critical. When you start out, if you have a passion and it's something that you've wanted to do since you were young, or whenever, or you've had this desire for quite a while, you'll have an ideal of how maybe it will work, and you think that this is just going to work, this is just going to happen. Maybe it worked for several other people, so you just think this is a guarantee. And then there are things just like in life where there are lulls, or there are, I don't care what you do, where there's, like they say, the time for feast, there's a time for harvest, there's a time for planting, and you've got to know, like you said, this right now is not working, so I've got to look at this from a different perspective, and what can I do to cause it to work? Because I think the things that we do are passionate about can work, but sometimes we just have to reposition it, like you said, or approach it differently, or look at it differently, which is where a business like yours, EconoSystems, comes into play, because sometimes we just can't see ourselves. We're too close to it. And so someone like you and Wenzel from EconoSystems can help us to look at it differently so we can reposition or repackage it so it works. How long does a market, if somebody called you in and they said they called you or through EconoSystems, your business, and they said, I want to do some market research on whatever, a business I've had for 5 years or whatever, or that I'm going to start up, and right now either the sales have dropped or they're just starting their business. How long is that process, and what are some of the things that you do in market research? For some reason this is like foreign to me. What are some of the things that you do? I know you said researching the competition and seeing, just what the breadth for the customer appetite out there for the product. But how do you go about finding that? How do you measure that?
Well, if I were to work with an entrepreneur, usually I ask them to give me at least 4 weeks. And it's not that I'm going to work on it full time, but I do need to call people and I do need to find sources for the information. And so a full market analysis includes a few things. First of all, it includes a profile of your customers. And oftentimes you can find that by researching on the internet. And you might enter keywords like demographics of X market. And somewhere, someone may have done an analysis of the market, and they'll tell you, especially these research institutes like this Pew Internet Research and other research institutes as them, they will say the typical buyer is a male between ages 25 and 34, and typical household income is $75,000 or more. And that's difficult to do to actually buy a market research is usually, you know, the minimum is $1,000, and they can run $5,000 or more. And someone has gone and they've done surveys and they've observed the market. But you can actually sometimes find a summary of the market, especially if your market is national. They'll put out a press release about this new survey that they've done, and they give general numbers. Now, you're not going to get the profile of the market in your neighborhood or your county, but if you serve a national market, sometimes you can find data on my typical customer is a male between the ages of 25 and 34, and they purchase products like these at electronic stores such as Best Buy, and then you know you've got to get your product into the Best Buys of the world. Those are the types of things that you're looking for, sex, age, education level, income level, race, and activities that they engage in. And that tells you who you're going to be marketing to. The next is the size of the market, and that's a little bit more difficult. What I would do is I do a lot of internet research and gather a lot of literature on the market and see if someone's estimated the size of the market, estimated the growth of the market. One of the things that I've done for sports markets, there are participation rates published by the athletic associations for different sports such as paintball, cycling, basketball. And I can take those participation rates and I can multiply them by census population data that I can get for your geographic area. And then you get an estimate of the potential numbers of participants in this sport in your neighborhood. And so there are a lot of different tricks like that. Mm-hmm. And that gives you an estimate of the size of the market. You know, maybe someone's actually done the research and you find an article and it tells you it's a, you know, $12 million market. Well, there you've got that research done, or you can kind of estimate it yourself. Then looking for trends. That's the most fun part of market research is doing a literature search on the internet for trends in your market. What's hot? What's not? Where are people going? How do they buy this? Are they buying from the internet more, or does it still have to be face-to-face selling? These are the types of things that are really important. So I would spend, if you came to me and asked me to do a full market analysis, I would probably spend 20 hours working on it, but I would ask you to give me about 4 weeks to do it. Mm-hmm. I might call other business owners and ask them, you know, who are your typical customers that come in, and what is the price that you charge? And that getting calls back and doing those interviews, it takes a while. So a really good full market analysis, I say, for me, would take about 4 weeks. Now, oftentimes, you can do a lot of this on your own, and I could guide you through it as a small business development advisor. I can guide you through. I can tell you the different steps to take. Now, a business owner might not be able to complete a market analysis as fully or as quickly because oftentimes they've already launched their business, so they're busy serving customers, or they've got a job and they're researching their business that they're going to launch. And so sometimes they don't have the time that they need to do all this, but they can still do a pretty good job. But that, for me, you know, doing just market research, that's about how much time it takes.
You know, and that's something that, and I so appreciate what you're sharing here with us today, Anne. And we're speaking with Anne Wenzel. She is actually the owner of EconoSystems. I encourage you to visit her online. If you are thinking about selling products, a service, starting a business, or if your business is experiencing change, and it could be change that right now you might not prefer, you might see, you know, that your sales are dropping. And through her market research and her business planning, she has the expertise. She has it from the corporate side of the street, and also from working with small businesses and the Small Business Development Center, which is national, through her company, EconoSystems, which she started. I know if you and I crossed paths when you were starting, it's got to be about 10 years, and she's online at www.econosystems, E-C-O-N-O, systems, spelled the way it sounds, .com. Again, that's www.econosystems.com. You hear what she's sharing with us this morning. She dials in from the West Coast. She knows what she's talking about. She is an expert at this. One thing I wanted to say was, as a creator, creative artists and for many other of our regular off-the-shelf listeners who are business owners. Some of them work for a corporate firm. Some are creative artists, and then some are small business owners crossing a wide spectrum of what our listeners do to earn income or bring income into their homes. But that said, for the creative artist, and it is difficult to not think, okay, I'm a painter, I'm a musician, I'm a writer, whatever your creative art is, it can be difficult to really see that business side of it. For a lot of artists, that it seems fills us a little cold to think, you mean I got to focus on this stuff? Can't write and everybody just come buy all my books, or I can't paint and everyone just come. And how many artists have I met who have said that? So to connect with somebody like you at Econosystems and say, you know what, I'm going to punt this off and let her do this, that's the benefit in working with somebody such as yourself through your firm Econosystems. I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned this earlier, your specialties, market research and business planning. What types of business planning services does Econosystems offer to its prospective clients?
Well, there are two specific types. One is where, you know, I would write your market analysis, and I do write different pieces. So, and I have a brochure where I break it down into estimating your demographic profile, where I tell you that, you know, you serve moms between, you know, the ages of 35 and 45 with incomes of, you know, $55,000 or more. I mean, I give you a real picture. That doesn't mean other people don't buy from you, but what it means is about, you know, 60% of the people that buy fall into this group. So if you're going to market, you need to market to them to save your marketing dollars, save your energy. You want to network with them. And then I have the market growth, the trends, the distribution patterns. And so you can buy either the whole market analysis from me or just sections if you want, if you really need. Maybe you've done a lot of research, but you're not quite sure about one of the sections. And then there's the business planning services. It works very much like a coaching service. I've modeled it very much like a coaching service. And a lot of artists and writers and entrepreneurs have worked with coaches that they've met throughout the years. And, you know, we have sessions and we talk about what you're going to do in between sessions. We have email exchanges, and then we meet again for 45 minutes over the phone. And so it is a real traditional coaching model. The difference is that in between sessions, we're filling in more and more of your business plan. So the coaching is to get you to actually sit down and write your business plan. And if you work one-on-one with me through Econosystems, what I do is I take notes of what's discussed on our telephone conversation, and I actually type them up and put them into your business plan template. So each time we meet, more and more of your business plan gets written. And you can fill in things that you do in between. And so we email the business plan as it gets more and more complete back and forth. So there's the, you know, let's get this business plan written, coaching service, and then there's a let me do your market research for you so that you really understand your market, so that you have a better idea of how successful your business is going to be. Is there a market for what you want to sell? And if there is, who is buying it, and how do you best reach the people that would buy your services?
This is a show that I'm glad that I did, so appreciate myself for doing it, and also for you reaching out to our listeners here at Off the Shelf. We have so many listeners that tune into this show, and I hope that they are really, really paying attention, because it is so important. It is so tempting to think everybody wants my product or my service. And if you can narrow and focus down who are the people who are most likely, they want what you have to offer. These people really want your product or your service, and there are people out there who do want what you have to offer. How can I best find these people so I can market to them, so I'm not just throwing money in the wind and wherever it lands, it lands. Maybe a few dollars land on the right place and a whole lot of it doesn't. Then you like spending a lot of money going, okay, where am I sales? then you got to focus on your market more, because when you find those people who want what you offer, that's when your sales are going to go up and increase. I had a friend who recently got her MBA, and she was thinking about starting a business. She's put it on hold since, but she was writing a business plan with another, a partner of hers. And the time she put into this, for our listeners who don't know what goes into a business plan, can you tell us briefly? Because I've heard people say, man, it takes a long time to write a thorough business plan. And when you go to get bank financing, they want to see your business plan when you put in for your small business loan. What are some of the elements that go into a business plan for our listeners who might not know, Ann?
I have seven sections that I have that I consider essential for a full business plan. And actually, there is an article at my website. You can go there and download it. And what I tell my clients is feel free to copy and paste my article into a Word template and then just fill in the seven pieces as your business plan. I think the most important part, and it seems so simple, but it's amazing a lot of people don't do it, is first you have to fill in the section of what am I offering, what am I selling, and you'll be surprised. It might take a while for you to actually fill that in. List your products or your services very specifically. It might be just one thing. It might be, you know, I'm selling a book that I'm going to write, or it might be, you know, I'm selling a book and I want to sell speaking services mm-hmm. on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Just what is it that you want to sell? List that first. List the products or services that you're going to sell. And you might start initially listing the price at which you would like to sell it. Now, once you do your market research, you might change that. But that first step of what is it exactly that I'm selling is so important. And I wonder if a lot of people don't waste a lot of time writing their business plan because they're not really clear on that. Once you're really clear exactly on what you're thinking about offering, that narrows the research that you have to do. You're not all over the place with your research. So that's the first thing, you know, the business name and location. So you fill that in. Now you've got two of those sections filled in right off the bat. And from there, then you look, as I talked about, the market trends. Really important to look at who else is doing this. And I have a competitive grid that I give my clients. They list the top competitors. Some industries have a lot of competitors, so I just ask them to list the top 7 to 10 competitors, their location, what exactly are they delivering, what type of services. For instance, let's use coaching as an example. Some coaches only do telephone coaching. Some coaches do telephone coaching. They do teleworkshops. Well, they'll take 4 to 6 clients at a time. They might rent a conference center and do weekend workshops. They might publish reports that they will sell for $9.95 as an ebook download. So each coach does something a little bit differently. What do they sell and how do they deliver it? Is it only telephone? Is it in person? Is it via reports? So these little nitty-gritty details, take a real good look at what your competitors do. That needs to be examined and filled in. Once you know what you're going to be charging and what exactly you're going to be offering, then that's when you do the financial forecast. And I just want to get it out there. Financial forecasts, it's not rocket science. You can call them financial guesses. That's exactly what they are. If someone delivers you or you see a friend who's launched a business and they have this beautiful financial forecast, keep in mind, it's a financial guess. Don't take it too seriously. I mean, do a good job doing it. That's why you do market research. You know, you've got your price. One of the things for very small businesses, it's kind of easy to do a financial forecast because you know what you're charging. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's you and your partner. You know how many hours you're going to work in a week. You can get a really good idea really quickly as to how many customers you can serve in a week. Then you think about how many weeks a year you're going to work, and you multiply that, what I'm going to charge, how many customers I can take in a week. I'm going to work 48 weeks in a year because I'm going to take time off at the holidays and I'm going to take a vacation. So that's your maximum revenue. That's sort of if I work flat out 48 weeks a year, this is how much revenue I can have. Well, most of us don't work flat out. Sometimes our business has slow times. sometimes we just want to, you know, be able to sip the coffee and read the paper in the morning.
Right.
So we don't want to go flat out 48 weeks a year. That's your maximum capacity, at which you probably would burn out really quickly if you did that. So then, you know, maybe take times are tough. Maybe I'm just going to estimate that I can do 75% of my capacity.
Okay.
Or my market is growing. I'm going to have to work at 90% of my capacity.
Mm.
And so that now becomes my forecast for revenue. And you can adjust that month by month, of course. A month when, if your industry, and you will know whether or not your industry has seasons, it's going to be a little bit lower, such as the framing industry. The custom framing industry is really slow in the months of January to April 15th. For some reason, during tax season, people don't get things framed, and as soon as they finish their taxes, people start going and getting things framed. And a good friend of mine that was in that business, she knew that, so she always expected sales to be slower.
I'm listening to you. The book industry is the summer months, and there's some months that they tell you, man, this is not the best time to bring a book out. And most industries, they're all like that. Again, working in the financial investment industry, there's certain markets that they're just times of the year that are better for certain markets than other times. These are just things, you know, just wanting to make $1 million every day. And I'm not saying that you can't, but people who are in business and they're successful, they pay attention to this type of stuff. They know what to do. They know where to go when. And that's why their success just continues to extend itself. They're not just throwing darts up in the wind. They see the bullseye, and they're aiming for the bullseye. Oh, my goodness. Ann, I wanted to also ask you, with banks, we know after the turmoil in the markets just started in 2000 and that's continuing, and now they're talking about what's going on in Europe, because we are in a global economy and have been for a while. With banks tightening their grip on money that they loan to small business, I mean, they really kind of clutch their fist in some areas. What are some other ways that entrepreneurs and small business owners, how can they generate some other ways other than getting a bank loan that they can generate funds to finance their businesses?
Well, if you don't want a bank loan, one of the things that you can do is you can take on an angel investor partner. And an angel investor sounds official, but it doesn't have to be official. It could be a relative that is older and has been financially successful, and they wouldn't mind putting $20,000, $25,000 into a business. I must say that it has to be a good business idea, and it has to, you know, you have to have a business plan. But even then, you know, for someone, let's say, you know, launching a writing business or an artist business, if it's someone that's close to you and you have something written down, you might be able to meet someone that is willing to invest in your business. And what I like about the angel investor route is that most people do not have all the skills that they need to run a business successfully. Some do. Some are well-rounded. Most of us are good at what we do, and maybe we're good at two or three other things. And if you bring in a partner, yeah, they'll own part of the business, but most angel investors, they want to help you out. They want to lend their expertise. And that could be good and bad. If you don't see eye to eye or pretty close, it can not be a good thing. But if you find a partner that works well with you, they can really help you out in areas where you don't want to run the business in that area, or maybe you have an idea of what to do, but somehow, you know, implementation just falls by the wayside because you're so much better at, you know, creating your art or writing your book or producing your product. I really think that a lot of businesses start out running fine with one person, but once they become successful, they really need more people. So that's why I like the angel investor route. You know, there's the other getting money from relatives and they don't put in anything. They believe in you, and that's a possibility too. But other than the bank loan or, you know, using your own credit cards, which is not really well advised, credit card fees are so high right now.
Yeah.
It used to be, back in the day, credit cards were relied on a lot by entrepreneurs.
Yes.
I just wouldn't advise it nowadays. I would say, you know, start with the cash that you have. See if you can meet some people who are interested. They have experience in your industry. and they have a little bit of cash because they're older and they've been more successful, and now they're kind of winding down, but they want to lend their expertise to other people. Now, to do that, you have to get out and network. You have to go to Chamber of Commerce meetings, or if you're in a particular industry that has conferences or, you know, art gallery openings or artist openings, places where people in your industry meet, you need to get out there and meet. And this has to be someone that you trust and that they trust you, and you have a good relationship. And then, of course, you really have to write down exactly who's going to do what and how, you know, keep in mind that when someone invests in your business, they expect to at some point take their money out. So that means you're either going to need to sell the business or you're going to need to pay them back, you know, and you need to come to terms with how is this investor going to get their investment back, or are they going to be, you know, lifelong partners, sort of like silent partners? That needs to be worked out. But it's definitely possible if you get out and network. If you like working solo, it's just going to be harder to get funding, and you're going to have to be customer financed. And being customer financed, again, it's one of those things totally underrated as a strategy. I think that people think about outside funding. And my husband works for a startup, and they're talking about getting millions of more dollars. And I look at him and I say, you're getting all these new customers. Why can't your customers fund your growth? And it's sometimes people don't think about it, but I think it is possible. It really is possible. If you keep your costs low and your sales are coming in and you develop what I call sweat equity, or maybe you don't take a paycheck regularly, you keep the revenue in the business, you can grow your business with customers. And I highly recommend it.
You know, I was listening to you when you were talking about the angel, and we know with the dot-com bust, that happened like in the the 90s or the late part of the 1990s. And, you know, everybody was putting all this seed money into these internet firms, and it didn't, not that they, some of them did succeed and do quite well, but not as many of them as the venture capitalists and whatnot thought that would. But there's a company by the name of Hay Needle. They do they really specialize in things like, if they have a store that, I think a hammocks.com is one of their stores. That's all they do. Hammocks, stands, hammocks. They don't do anything else but hammocks. They might have another store that all they do is certain types of lawn furniture, and that's all that store will sell. All these stores roll up into Hay Needle Incorporated, which is a multi-million dollar firm that was started, I think, in 2002 when they bought NetShops. No, they bought Hammocks.com, and they used to be called NetShops. And in 2009, they refocused and named themselves Hay Needle. They have two venture capitalists who support them, and that's where they get, you know, their seed money from. But they have really, really taken off. So when you said that, I thought about that company in particular, and there are other companies on the internet that's how they do, other than going through a bank. They get a venture capitalist and they get seed money from them, and that's how their business takes off. And maybe the people who give them the seed money, they may take a percentage, or they may own like maybe, I don't know, 5% of the firm or 25% of the firm, and that's how they get their money back that they put into the company. I wanted to talk, and this interview has gone so fast, and I tell you, I'm sitting there saying, I got to have her back on because I haven't asked you like but a third of the questions I was going to ask you, and we only have 6 minutes left. It's gone by so fast, and there's so much other things that I wanted to share with our listeners because you have so much knowledge. And again, before when we wrap up, I will give our listeners information. I want to now, you see how knowledgeable Ann Winslow is. She's the owner of EconoSystems. She's got the corporate experience. She's got the small business experience. She's been on both sides of the street. And she's at www.econosystems. That's easy to remember. I encourage you to bookmark it because she is constantly doing new things. She offers workshops. She's got articles on her website. The template for the small business plan. That alone is beneficial. And again, it's www.econosystems, ECONO systems is spelled the way it sounds, .com. Again, that's www.econosystems.com. And the owner of that is Ann Winslow, who we are so honored to have with us this morning on Off the Shelf with just 5 minutes left, Ann. I know you also speak at organizations and companies like Pine Chemicals Association, the San Francisco State University, the Menlo Park Chamber of Commerce, and you had mentioned Chamber of Commerce and networking with them earlier in the interview. Have you found that public speaking is an effective way to grow your business, Anne? Has that been effective for you?
Yes. I think that it definitely is a way to meet a lot of people. And one of the reasons why I've been doing that now, because of the type of work that I do, because I have a big contract, you know, with Small Business Development Center, and then I have one other client that really gives me a lot of business. I can take on an occasional additional client. I don't always need new business. But I continue to do public speaking. And one of the reasons why I do that is because a lot of people get exposed to you. More and more people meet you. And I had mentioned to you that I'm in the process of signing a book contract. Mm-hmm. And so I continue to get out and meet people. And one of the reasons why I do that is because when my book is published, I want people to see it and see my name and say, oh, I know her. She mm-hmm. spoke at my Chamber of Commerce meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether or not they're going to buy the book, but I want them to see my name on the book and say, oh, I've met her, and she did a really good job speaking. I really enjoyed her talk. Mm-hmm. And so I find that people know me more and more. And whereas I can only take about 3 or 4 clients on at a time because my mm-hmm. work is so one-on-one and focused,
mm-hmm.
I know that in the long run it's going to benefit me to be exposed to, you know, by now thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I do, people enjoy what I share with them. And I don't do a lot of heavy marketing when I speak. I kind of forget on the one hand. And on the other hand, I really do just want to get out there and get people to know me and know my expertise and know that when they see my name on the book once it's published, they'll know, oh, she knows what she's talking about. So I think I'm going to pick this up.
Wow. You know, Anne, you, oh, my goodness, the years, and this is the first time Anne and I have actually spoken, but we've known each other for several years. We've known of each other for several years. That is so important when somebody sees your name. And sometimes to the artist, I encourage you, to our off-the-shelf listeners, not to get discouraged as you can continue to make connections and network with people, to focus on enriching that relationship, because a time may come, you may have gone years just trying to promote or work with a product or a service on your own, and somebody may come along and just say, you know what, I'd like to work with you because of the work you would have already done at workshops, speaking engagements, et cetera, when that huge launch comes and that big splash of distribution goes out. You might get a phenomenal amount of sales because people would already be aware of who you are. You just needed a larger platform, a larger distribution platform. That's all you needed as you continue to build those relationships. We only have 2 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you one last question. And honestly, I had about 20 more questions I wanted to ask you, but I didn't get to them. Oh, my goodness, it went so fast. I've got to have you back. I'm waiting to hear what our listeners say.
But
I wanted to ask you, with just 2 minutes left, what last words of encouragement or advice would you leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf?
You know what I have found in my business, that I do the workshops, I put out an e-newsletter, and I send out my cards. When I think of someone, I call them up or I send them an email saying, I saw this article. And I think one thing that's a little bit different is I really care. I don't have that many customers, and my mailing list isn't that big, but when I meet people, I remember them, and I really like them, and I really care about them. And it surprises me how each of these things that I do works together. And I got a client not because she went to my workshop, not because she got my e-newsletter, not because she knows people that I know, but because of all three. So keep out, make a marketing plan and just keep out there and just keep caring about people and just getting out there and caring about them and sharing yourself with them. And someone will call you or they'll hire you or they'll buy something from you, and you'll realize it wasn't any one thing that I did. It was because I was consistent and because I was out there and because I really cared. And you'll find this happening over and over and over again.
What Anne just shared with us, consistent. So not sometimes doing it and then sometimes not going 6 months and send out a newsletter and going 6 more months and not send out a newsletter. That is so important. We are within seconds of the end of this wonderful show here at Off the Shelf with Ann Wenzel. I encourage you to visit her online, Econosystems, which is www.econosystems.com. I thank each of our listeners for being here with us today, and thank Ann for dialing in early this Saturday morning from the West Coast. And please stop in and visit me online at www.chistel.com and pick up a copy of Long Walk Up when Ann's book comes out and she lets me know. I'll let you guys hear it off the shelf know so you can get a copy of her book and get even more of her expertise in print form that you can keep forever and ever. And I wish all of you a wonderful, blessed, and happy Memorial Day. Thank you so much, as always, for being here with us at Off the Shelf. Please tune in next Saturday at 11 o'clock. We will continue to bring you writers, creative authors, business leaders, and other movers and shakers that impact the literary art field. Thank you, thank you, thank you to Ann Wenzel. Please go visit her at www.econosystems.com. I'm so happy and grateful for this show. See you again next Saturday at 11. Remember that you're truly loved, so incredibly blessed and valued. Goodbye for now, and Ann, I'll shoot you an email.
Okay, thanks.